Brian, how was your run today?
Well, this morning was Friday morning, so I went to November Project Hills, and I actually participated. The hills have been really hard to go to when you can't do much, especially when it was cold out. To drive there, you have to drive there early in the morning. I walk up, I'd be exhausted by the time I got there. There was a bounce, and then everyone would be doing their running around workout, and I would walk up and down the hill pretty much once, and it would take me half an hour, and I'd be done. And it wasn't very satisfying. The stadiums were much more satisfying. But now that I can run, last week I ran, I think, one hill. Ran walk.
Yeah.
You know, run 2 minutes, walk a minute, run 2 minutes.
Yeah.
This week I ran. I took maybe three walks, and I did 3 miles, Peter. 3 miles of hills. And I didn't push it at any point. I kept it low. I had my heart rate monitor on. I tried to keep that under 160, really under 155. And it felt good. By the end, when my watch buzzed at 3 miles, my hip was like, stop now. Come on. Let's not push it too far. But no pain or anything. It was just, you know, muscle saying, we haven't done this before. It felt great.
What, when you think about your recovery and your hashtag Rebuild Brian and the process that you're going through now that you're sort of coming out of your really, really quiet time, coming back to fruition, to your destiny, what?
My density.
Your density. You're trying to lessen your density,
actually. Oh.
It's so hard.
It's not even dense. It's just floppy, flabby.
It's got mass.
Jiggly.
It doesn't really hold up.
It's just like a bag of mashed potatoes.
It's like a Dali painting. You need a crutch to just hold up the rolls of fat.
Yeah, as my body watch flops over the crutch.
That's what I'm saying. As you're coming back to life, your running life, what's the dream? What's the goal? What are you setting your sights on?
Peter, my mind, as you may imagine at this point, is an intense scape, landscape, soundscape of crazy thoughts. Because on the one hand, I'm a little nervous and I'm thinking, I don't know if I'll ever run a 5K. Well, you know what? I just did that this morning without even knowing it. You know,
right.
There were hills. That Summit Ave is intense, but I kept, you know, somewhere around, I don't know, 12-minute pace. So that's slow for me, obviously, but it included walking, and it was my first time running over a mile straight. So kudos to me, man. And I was really surprised. I didn't think I would hit that for a month, and now I've done it after, a week and a half or something like that, two weeks, not even. So I'm now really having to think about holding myself back.
Right.
But it feels as if, now that was a big hill workout.
That's right.
I
mean,
if I get down on flat ground, I almost feel like I could run, walk 5 miles, which is crazy talk. I mean, what? Are you kidding me? But I think I could probably do it.
Do you approach it as distance or do you approach it as time?
Well, really it's time, but I mean, it's distance is a convenient way to talk about it. And, you know, that's when your watch bings. But no, it would be, well, it would be a run walk. I think I'm going to try to do this. I think I'm going to try to do 5 minutes running, 1 minute walking, for the first mile, maybe first 2 miles, and then just see how it goes, but keep the pace slow. Cause really, really what I want to do is get my body used to the bouncing and the smashing, and my heart and lungs, my cardiovascular system back up to where it needs to be. And do that. But, you know, there was a point not so long ago, I think it was last week, that I thought 5 miles? No, 2 miles was like, that's not going to happen for a long time. I liked running 2 and 4 minute chunks. So I don't know. Now I feel like the sky's the limit. Like, well, if I just keep on this pace by November, I'll be running an ultra. You know, it feels as if I'm running for the first time in my life.
Well, I that's interesting you say that because I really was thinking in the back of my mind, we just saw recently friend of the show, Amy Moritz,
yes,
just completed her very first ultra.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm inspired by it. I think our listeners are inspired by it. She's an inspiring person. Are you inspired and are you targeting any destination or timeline for yourself in terms of a longer race?
Like I said, my mind is awash with, the thoughts are like dandelion petals in a tornado. So I don't want to just grab one and say it. I will say this.
All right.
Secretly.
Yeah, just between you and me. No one else is listening.
I have now signed up for 3 races this year.
What's happening? Yeah.
So the first one is in early June. Andrea and I did sign up for the 10K at the North Face Endurance Challenge at Mount Wachusett. Now, this is a very challenging race. We did it last year.
Yes.
It's very steep up and down. A lot of it is single track, and a lot of it is rock climbing. Not rock climbing, but you know, the rock scramble. And the reason I agreed to do it is not because I think I'm going to run all of it or even most of it, because I'm going to feel okay and not upset with myself for walking a lot of it.
Right.
You know, I can probably run the first mile, and then I'll probably walk for 2 or 3 miles.
And for you, from where you're coming from, it really is more endurance than it is race.
Precisely. So I'll be happy to walk a bunch of it, and then maybe run the last mile. So that's really how I'm approaching that one. It's not like it's a 6-mile run.
No, no.
It's going to be, you know, an hour or so of good physical activity. Plus, it's a great crowd. It's a ton of November Project people there. It's just, it's fun. We did it last year. It was more fun than I would have expected. The second race,
I want to guess. I want to go backwards.
Okay.
I'm gonna guess the third race.
Yes.
Is probably a little race I like to call the Millinocket Marathon.
Where's the finish line? Which way to the finish line? You can't get there from here.
Well, and of course that is the third race. I mean, that's the only one I had signed
up for. That's the one we know was on the docket. Right.
So, we just did this trail race sign up a couple of days ago. So it was very, very recent. It was once I ran 2 miles or walked 2 miles. Then I said, you know what? In a month, a little over a month, I'll be able to do this. Even if I walk most of it, it'll be fine.
And are you Millinocketing full or half, or do you not know right now?
Well, that's part of these dandelion seeds that are flying around. I don't know. We're gonna see. I will see. I'll know by September, clearly, because your training changes significantly.
Significantly.
And then we did sign up for a 5K near us, the DeCordova 5K.
Oh, gorgeous race.
And it's a little 3-miler. It's in the woods. Again, I could walk a lot of it if I needed to. And I haven't done it in a couple of years, so that'll be fun. And that's just around the corner from our house. So I'm not racing either of these. I'm participating in them. And we're just doing it because it's a fun way to spend part of a day. Andrea, I think, will be competing in them because she's now a beast.
It's all happening.
And running 1,000,000 miles a week and totally crushing everything. I will just be participating in cheerleading. And then we'll see what the summer holds. I mean, I might keep ramping up or not. We have this big hiking vacation that's going to be happening in July.
Yes,
the end of July out in the great American Southwest.
I'm looking forward to it. So, it's funny. You haven't told me any details. Where am I supposed to show up?
Well, I'll let you know.
Should I just wait?
I'll let you know.
I'm packing my stuff, and I'll just wait for you to pick me up.
Yeah, wait for the text.
Great.
But I need to, A, not get injured, and B, do some different kind of training. I need to do some long, long, long hikes and a lot more stairs to get ready for that. So, you know, really distance running is not something I'm into. So if I can hit a 5-mile run at some point between now and the 4th of July, frankly, that would be mind-blowing. It really would be.
All right. Well, keep us posted.
Okay.
Come on, break.
Peter, so you heard all about my run and my thoughts of the future. How was your run today?
Nope. Let's get to our guest. My run was fine, Brian. It's fine.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. You are a consistent beast.
I'm trying to do what I do, taking the edge off, as they say. But speaking of beasts need hydration.
Everybody needs hydration, but runners really need hydration.
Runners do, cyclists do, trail runners, all sort of the extreme sport people need.
Adventure runners?
Oh, I don't even know what that is. We find out in a few seconds. we're about to talk with Josh Sprague, founder of
Orange Mud. Whatever Orange that Mud. Means.
Well, it means there's a whole, he doesn't go into that story, but yeah, you know that story? about why he named it Orange Mud?
Why don't you tell me instead of having the founder of the company tell us?
Well, he doesn't tell us when we talk to him. I know. We never asked.
I was there. I was in that interview.
But the story there is his middle name is Clay. He wanted to name his kid Clay. The wife kiboshed the name Clay.
Okay.
So he wanted to use the name Clay in his company name. And
Clay Hydration.
Yeah, everything he tried, and he tried like 40 GoDaddy
H2 Clay
handles, domain
Clay
names.
Clay 2.0.
Didn't work. So he was like, Orange Clay, Clay Orange, because he likes the color orange. So he went with mud, because what, you know, clay is, mud's clay,
well,
just wet.
And he lives out there in Colorado, and you see a lot of that orange mud when it rains or when the snow melts.
But if you've not heard of orange mud, so what that is hydration packs, hydration bottles, handholds, all sort of crazy gear that you need to be out there for the long haul. Brian, you're a long haul guy.
Well, it's interesting, Peter, because you're kind of doing this sales pitch. And we didn't know what to expect from Josh when we got on the phone with him. He didn't give a sales pitch at all. I mean, we had to kind of lead him into it, say, hey, can you tell us about your company? He wanted to talk about crazy races that he's done, and the guy, he's done a lot.
Yeah, his first story is insane. You know what?
Amazing.
Let's stop talking. Let's go talk to Josh.
All right.
Hey, guys. Hello. Josh here from Orange Mud.
He actually showed up. This is amazing.
Where are you calling in from?
Colorado. Castle Rock, Colorado.
Is that where you live?
Yeah, I do. It's on the south side of Denver.
Okay.
It's basically a suburb of Denver for all practical purposes, but basically right between Denver and Colorado Springs.
Oh, awesome. So you probably never go outside then.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is awesome. I'm not going to lie. I got a little sunburnt today because apparently the summertime sun is more harsh than the winter. And like summer has came kind of quick. I mean, it's still not really hot. It's like 80. But yeah, I got a little sunburn yesterday on a 3-hour bike ride and hour run today. And I don't even know how that happened given I've been outside like most of the season. So,
are you more of a cyclist than a runner at this point, or do you do both evenly?
Yeah, you know, in theory, I do both. I do a 66% bike, basically. I bike 3 days a week. I run two. But if I had to sacrifice anything, I generally sacrifice the run. But at the same time, I'm always more afraid of the run if I'm not strong enough. So
if you don't keep up with it, yeah.
You know, yeah, I do a lot of cycling. I always have, and I love running. I always tell people I like running, but I love biking. And, you know, but running actually gets me thin. Biking doesn't. Like, I could have a full-on beer gut and biking. Like, I could bike 1,000 miles a day, and that's just the way biking is. But running, you know, you get more fit, and there's just a lot of perks, really, especially to doing both. And a lot of it, I believe in it for injury-free anyway. You know, we do so much in the ultra-running space that I see it seems like half of the people I know are injured all the time, and it's because they run too much. So that's why I think there's not – most of us just don't have the biomechanics to do 5 days a week without being injured. We all think we do, but then you end up getting injured. So and then everybody blames it on something else, but that's usually the reality. Just you need a little more low impact.
That's really timely since this is Brian. I'm coming off of hip surgery due to, you know, overtraining. So I'm coming back into it. And I've been spending a lot of time on the bike, and it's really funny because I've just started running again in the last 2 weeks. And it's one of those things where I'm saying, oh, yeah, I don't have to bike so much. I'm going to start running, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. And then and the little voice is saying, not a good idea. You should probably keep on the low impact.
Exactly.
But it is tempting because I'm a runner more than a cyclist. So.
Yeah, it's hard. We all get sucked in, but the reality is very few people ever do a good job cross-training. And usually it's more than bike and run anyway. You know, I mean, a lot of people get knee problems and they cross-train, you know, doing bike to help running. You know, they're running and alleviate it. But the reality is, all of us bikers and runners, we end up basically having really weak supporting muscles because we make these real strong quads and calves, but the rest of our body isn't built around it. So we're all stupid with making messes of ourselves, but you know, I try to be smart, but I don't. I only get smart when I get injured, and then I get smarter until I'm fixed, and then I get dumb again. So it's kind of hard.
I was just going to say, that's the best quote I've heard. So that was great.
Sure.
So, Josh, what came first for you in your life, running or cycling, or was it both?
Well, I mean, I think almost everybody starts with biking, you know, as far as like as a kid, you know, I don't know where that really starts. But I think I ran cross country in high school and I rode my bike a ton as a kid. But I think cross country is really where it probably all got started as far as, okay, this is a sport maybe. And I was never that good. I mean, I could run fast. Like my freshman year, I was really fast. I went into high school and I was like 5 foot tall and 110 pounds. And I was the youngest kid in my class, you know, and I was really quick then, but I grew like 10 inches that year and like 40 pounds and basically into what I am today. And that slowed me down a lot. And I never really got quicker after that. So yeah, cross country though, that's really what got probably my love of running started. And then biking kind of evolved from there.
And then when did ultras start creeping into your world?
So probably about 15 years ago or so, I guess. It really started with adventure racing, more so than a pure ultra per se, because back then there really wasn't such a thing.
Right.
It was extremely small. But adventure racing, I've done plenty of ultras in ultra distances in adventure racing, in addition to ultra biking and kayaking and swimming and everything else in the sport. But definitely adventure racing. It started about, I think, 2003 or so.
Name an adventure race that you went on that either when you arrived at the location that you had never been on before, or at some point through the race, you looked around and thought, what am I doing here? You know, where it really kind of blew your mind.
I'd say the coolest one was probably Primal Quest, Moab. They basically picked us up in a bus, all of us, 100 of the best teams from around the world. And they haul you out, a 4-person team. They haul you out into the desert. They didn't tell you where. And they dropped you off. And they said, cool. All right. See you guys in, you know, however many days it takes you to get to the finish. And we had to run the first, like at first light. It was crazy. They had a helicopter up filming everything. And every team, all 100 teams, had a horse that you had to deal with. And we had to get the horse at like 3 a.m. And, you know, it was all set up for us when we got out there in the middle of the desert. So our horse was named Macaroni, and he was a slow old quarter horse. And the start line went off right about, it wasn't light, but there was enough light to film. So maybe 5:30 in the morning, somewhere in that time in July. And then they had a bunch of cowboys out there on horses with shotguns, and the start of the race was a shotgun start. And between the helicopters and the shotguns, 400 people with 100 horses, it was full on chaos. It just led to the craziness of, let alone, we just got dropped off in the middle of the freaking desert and we got to figure out where we're going. And we had to haul a horse with us for the first 30 miles through the desert. And keep it alive.
This sounds like a crazy dream.
It was really cool. It was the crazy. It's the only time in years of adventure racing that I've ever had to start with an animal. But we had to haul that sucker for 30 miles, and one person could ride it, or you could all put your packs on it. But that was it. Couldn't ride and have your pack. So Macaroni, basically, we tugged through the desert and put our packs on it for the most part. And we had to find water. I mean, it's just a whole different channel when you have an animal like that in the 115-degree heat in the sand. So, yeah, it was cool. It was one of the most memorable starts to a very epic journey, for sure.
And how long did that race wind up being in total? How many miles?
Well, for us, we went about 60 miles on the run. Then it was about the same on the bike. I think it was 58 on the bike, and then an 8-mile whitewater swim, and another 38-mile run. Oh, there's 58-mile kayak after that, and then almost a 40-mile run in the through these crazy canyons, and then we were done. So we didn't. This was one of the most memorable events. It's also when we didn't finish. So we raced for 92 hours. and the sand and the heat and the reflected canyon heat was 100. They said 130, 140 degrees. Like one guy got hella evac'd out with heat stroke, and he survived fortunately. But a lot of people had heat exhaustion, and two of my teammates, their feet had rotted off, like straight up rotted off. They couldn't wear shoes for a month. They couldn't work for a month. And we had to DNF at, you know, day four, 92 hours in. And I'm like forever mad about it. but at the same time, you know, it was still one of the coolest experiences ever. The winning team, I think, finished the rest of the race in maybe 6 days, I think is what it was. And then very back of the pack were like 10, 11 days. We would have been probably in that 8 to 10 day finish had we been able to continue. But in that case, you had to have at least three people. So losing two, we were out.
Okay. Josh, that's totally insane and amazing. And so my question is, what series of events in your life leads you up to the point where you say, oh, yeah, I'll join that team and do that race? I'm ready.
There's none, actually. You know, it's
just a whim.
There's just none. It's scary. Yeah. I mean, you know, at that point, you know, I'd raced, the longest I'd raced before that was 39 hours in Yosemite, which was an epic event. But yeah, that one was special. It was the, you know, kind of the cream of the crop. It's one of the most epic races out there, called Primal Quest. You know, it's something that we had done so many races that were 12 and 24 hours and a couple multi-days in there over the years, like about 100 of them. And you kind of hit a point where 24 hours, I mean, it's I'm not this strong anymore. But back then, 24 hours, you could go pretty much as hard as you can go for 24 hours. It's unbelievable. Once you start doing this, all of a sudden you just hit a point where you go as hard as you can bike. I mean, of course, you're throttling back a hair. It's not like a 100-yard dash, but you're going hard. And you know, I just look at the paces we used to do, and it was just crazy. So then to look at a multi-day was like, well, how hard can it really be? And honestly, it just wasn't that hard. It was an amazing adventure, and especially once you got through that first cold night in the desert, which is ironic given it was so hot during the day. Once you got through that first night, then the rest of the event, it was such an amazing feeling to see the sunrise and you're still going. You're like, we're still racing. Like people, you start thinking about like your friends. They're like say at sunrise, you're like, cool, our friends are waking up right now. And we've been racing all night and all day and all night the previous night and all day. And then okay, now they're having breakfast. Now they're having lunch. Now they're having dinner. Now they're having a cocktail. Now they're going to bed. And then, okay, now they're getting back up again, you know, and you're still racing. And it's such a neat feeling to realize that your body can do things that are so far beyond what most people will ever realize. And you just don't need much sleep. I mean, you just don't. Anybody can do it. It's just something I don't think most people know, and including ourselves. We were really shocked at how strong we were going, you know, day three and day four in that race.
That's astounding. And as a non ultra racer, non really enduring, you know, Peter and I both run a couple of marathons apiece, and that's it for longer distance races. Your first marathon is amazing. It's astounding that you've been able to, you know, run for that period of time. So to do it for day in and day out, you've got to carry that for a long time, I would think. As a, it must get a little addicting, wanting to have that feeling back again.
It's terrible.
I'm sure it is.
It is. It's a terribly addicting thing, that's for sure.
How about training for something like that? Are you a solo trainer, or do you train with friends or groups, or do you have a coach?
Yeah, well, so back then, I mean, I don't adventure race much anymore. The sport's really dried up, unfortunately, and some of it for me, I hit a point where I just got tired of all the coordination. So I do a lot more solo training now. But yeah, back then, you know, I went riding with my buddies all the time. I pretty much always ran by myself. Running's kind of like skiing with somebody. You know, it's really hard to find somebody that's exactly your pace. And I have to work hard to be a good runner. So I need to kind of focus. But biking, you know, we spent a lot of time with our friends, and just, you know, a lot of times it wasn't even hard. You know, there were plenty of people I rode with that it was just cool. You know, let's go for a ride. You know, there wasn't a plan. It was, you know, let's, if anything, they'd usually be mad at me because I'm like, hey, tonight, let's take this side trail. I saw it the other day on a map. And, you know, next thing you know, we're out there for 6 hours and they're kicked off because they aren't adventure racers. But, so I'm that guy. You got to be careful when you go with that. You might want to have an emergency beacon, but the, you know, the fun part about that sport is that it's entire, like when you look at the root of it, and it's about fun. It's about adventure. It's about using a map and compass to get from point A to point B. You have no course marking. You have no support. You know, if you're not prepared, you can die, and that sucks. So you don't want to die. So you make sure you're prepared. But you know, when you're training for, you know, some of these other sports, like when I trained for my first Ironman, for example, I did hire coaches, and it was awesome. I was so pumped with what I learned from that. But it also took so much of the fun away from it, because every day was like, sorry, man, I can't ride with you. You're not fast enough to ride with me, or I'm not fast enough to ride with you, or sorry, I can't run with you because I need to do this specific workout today. And that took, it was a neat thing to do, but it took so much fun away from it that, I did coaching for a year, and then I have a coach now, but it's kind of a different thing. It's a little more loose. So yeah, so a little bit of both, I guess, is the long and short of it.
So now, this is Peter. I got a couple of questions. The first I want to say is the adventure race lifestyle. Would you say that that's a pre-having kids thing?
Just, yeah,
from a time
definitely.
Perspective?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I took 10 days off for that one event. I mean, I can't even imagine what my wife would, like, the house wouldn't even be here. Actually,
right, yeah, up and gone.
It would be bad. But yeah, it definitely was. And you know, I think that's the cool part about, you know, like right now I do a lot of endurance mountain bike racing and endurance running, and a lot of big distances. But you know, I train during the weekdays, so I'm not taken away from my family on the weekends and even at nights, or if I do it at night, it's on my trainer in my basement after the kids are in bed. And you know, I think it's just a different motive. You know, my goal is to finish. I'm not looking to win anything, and I'm definitely not. I'm just not that fast. But I enjoy it. So my whole strategy is I train enough. I call it like the half-assed training guide, really. You know, I train hard enough to be able to finish strong and finish healthy and not hurt myself, but yet I don't put in 20 hours a week like people do. And it's just, I just can't. I work so many hours. It's amazing I even find time to train. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, the adventure racing sport, it's a tricky one because you have to train at three disciplines, just like Ironman. You have to train at least three disciplines for adventure racing. You know, if not five, six, really. But yeah, it's definitely a hard one.
Well, now, speaking of your long hours at work, can we get into that a little bit? Your brand and your business is Orange Mud, and I'm fascinated with the idea of when and where were you, where you said the first time ever in your brain out, and then said it out loud, hey, you know what, I'm gonna design a better hydration system or a way to carry stuff. How does that come about?
So the idea was there from adventure racing for a very long time. I don't think I thought about it all the time. Like when you're running forever, and especially in crazy terrain, no trails, just sucking life, and you stare at your teammates' back all the time, and we're watching our packs like slice our backs open and all this. The idea was there for a long time. It's just, I don't think it was like the idea to start a business. It's just, I kept looking at it. I'm like, gosh, that upper part of your body is so stable. Why can we not just put our packs there? But it was after Ironman St. George. It was just training. I just got sick and tired of training. And stashing bottles, using waste packs and handhelds and all that. And it was just after a really hot day of training, I was running this 1 mile loop, and I had either a homeless dude. I saw a homeless dude going up and down this Imperial Highway. But I also saw a coyote on that same stretch. And so one of the two either peed on my bottle or drank from my bottle, or, you know, I don't know, maybe some weird bug landed on it. But whatever the case, I went up there and took a drink from that thing. It was disgusting, and I don't know what happened. But it was that moment that I'm like, I got to build my own pack. And you know, then it took like 6 months before I actually did it. Like I'd been thinking about it a lot, but it's just like anything. You don't know where to start. I don't think a lot of people know where to start. You know, a lot of us have ideas for things that, you know, why has no one ever done this? But then, well, how do I do it? And so, yeah, it was basically the very end of the year of 2011. Same thing. I went out for a run that day. It was really hot. And I kept thinking about it. And, you know, I'm looking at my wife and I schedules. We had a 3-month old at the time. And I was just like, man, we can't keep both working as many hours as both of us do. So, I need to do something about that. Why don't I take action on this idea that's been in my brain for so long and make something. So I went in the garage and I destroyed a gun holster, a fanny pack, tie down strap, and took a hotel sewing room kit and sewed together this crude concoction. And I put it on my back, went out for a little jog, and came back inside and told my wife, hey, we're going to start a business, and it's probably going to cost about $50,000 to get it off the ground. And best case, we sell stuff. Worst case, we have two backpacks worth $25,000 each, perfectly designed for us. And that's where it all started.
And so my son and I watch a ton of Shark Tank, so I'm fascinated from like the idea of like patenting and all that. Did that happen? Did you have to do any sort of, hey, this is the design that's unique to us and we're going to call it this, or did you say,
yeah.
And did you go through the idea of, well, maybe I'll sell this idea to someone and just be done with it? Or did you know the business and doing the business and launching the site? And because you're way out there and your videos are great. Now you're podcasting, you're doing all these things. Did you have that grand design, or did it all sort of fall into place over time?
No, it definitely fell into place because, yeah, I can't think that far ahead. It took on a life of its own, really. I mean, the irony is that, you know, I'm such a trail-oriented person, but at the time that I built the first pack, our Hydroquiver, I really thought it was going to be a triathlete-focused company because at the time I was training for Ironman, and I didn't, like, in my background, you know, again, this is really pre-ultra running, or at least at the forefront of ultra running. It was still quite new. I just, like, the way I saw it is there's no way you can go out and run, you know, over 2 hours with this bottle-based pack. And because we only have a 24-ounce water bottle in it. So I thought, this is a marathon, half marathon trainer, triathlete trainer. This isn't a trail runner's pack. But little did I know that the trail runners are the ones that started picking it up and buying it like crazy. And triathletes too, but we just found so many triathletes were trail runners, and that's what they wanted this for. And, you know, so that all of a sudden kind of took a whole life of its own, and we pivoted into this trail running market. And then it was really consumer questions saying, hey, I like this, but I like a 2-bottle pack. Can you make that? Oh, I like that, but I want it with chest pockets. And, you know, oh, I want, you know, this. And can you make a bladder pack? Because there's sometimes I need even longer. And can you make a handheld? Because I train with shorter stuff. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So, you know, in the beginning, I really didn't know where it would go. I just hoped that it was going to be something that my wife was going to quit her job to run it. And so she could, you know, manage the kids. And, we had one then, but quickly became two. So I just thought, you know, surely just we can make one product work for good enough for that. But it just took a life of its own. And then as the market grew for us, we started kind of realizing, hey, you know what, we can really make a go of this. And it just took off. But it definitely was not, it was definitely not laid out at all. We're so far beyond what I ever thought it would go to. Put it that way. I don't know very many people could ever really forecast, you know, business going from where we were to where we are now. That's, if you can, you're way smarter than I am.
You should start betting on horse races is what you should probably do.
Because that always works well for me.
You're at a price point that's the same or a little above a lot of your competition in this hydration pack range. What are the other differences? Mm-hmm. I mean, I assume it's a quality difference, or, you know, what's attracting ultra runners and trail runners to the Orange Mud product?
Yeah, so the first one is I think durability. You know, that's always paramount all of my designs. So when I, you know, my background was in the medical device manufacturing space, and there, you know, we were making parts to save people's lives or improve people's lives. And, you know, for me, I firmly believe in that commitment that we had there to quality. And so as I started my own business, you know, I took that same thought. And then, you know, again, of course, on the adventure racing side, I've had packs break, you know, and you're out there on the trail, and that just sucks. There's just nothing to make you more mad than having this $150 pack break on you. It just drives me crazy. So I actually build redundant failures potentials into the pack. So any area that you could potentially tear through abuse, and that's the only way you could do it, it has a backup plan, at least one. Most of them have multiple backup plans. So you, like, if you ask around, you won't find people with broken orange mud stuff. It's just not what happens. So that's first, or at least one of the top ones. Stability, you know, when it comes to running with packs, I have had full-on gashing, like nice, good dripping blood from my packs before. So, you know, with all of my pack designs, that's obviously something I test like mad, and I really pay attention to consumer feedback. Every time I launch a new pack, it's what I'm the most scared of is, okay, this works for me. It's worked for the other people to help me test it. But how is it going to work once I release it to public? And because everybody's different, there's so many different configurations of people. We've got a pretty good understanding at this point of, you know, the risk of each person. But that's something that we really, really pay enormous attention to, micro attention to, is any feature that could potentially rub and cause irritation. And, you know, and we do, I believe, a fantastic job of ensuring you're not going to have that. And then breathability, stability and breathability. Everything I do is focused on stabilizing the fluid in the pack so it doesn't move on you. Because again, any movement is going to cause rubbing. So that's always number one. And then I want to get that heat away from you, because if you're too hot, you're going to heat it anyway. So everything we do is to make sure that the packs will breathe really well.
I'm a good size runner. I'm a member of the Clyde Army, as we like to call
yep.
it. So I'm very sensitive to the rubbing issue. In fact, when I train any kind of long distance, and I'm talking anything over 12 or 15 miles, and I have to bring hydration with me, I can't necessarily do a route where I'm going to loop, or I'm going to have a place where I can get it at a store or something. If I'm going to go sort of remote, I know I'm bringing my hydration belt, and I can't stand the belt. And the question I have really is, what product did you end up making that you were surprised was embraced by maybe a sport that it wasn't necessarily designed for? Like, is there anybody coming at you that is writing to you or that you hear about using your product in a different way than you sort of initially intended, meaning not necessarily for triathletes?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, for sure. We stand-up paddleboard is a funny one to me, because I literally have designed a pack for stand-up paddleboard, and we don't sell it near as much to people for use for stand-up paddleboard. People buy it for skate skiing and various different things, but they don't buy it for stand-up paddleboard. So what we see is more people buying our endurance pack or gear vest for stand-up paddle. And it's so ironic, given that I've literally designed a pack for stand-up paddle, but yet they buy the other one. So, but again, it shows the type of person that's buying it and what they see. Like, I looked at it from a recreational side. I didn't look at it as a stand-up paddle racer. And the stand-up paddle racers are the ones that are going to spend the money on a pack, where the recreational people, probably not as much. So that's been a big one. And then, because our packs are so low profile, which is really focused for the run and the bike, in both the endurance pack and gear vest, we find a lot of people buy them and they put them under their jackets for skiing, because it doesn't kick them off the chairlift, or snowboarding as well. So that's been kind of really cool to see. And then even just some of the, you know, people buy them for, you know, shooting and, you know, going hiking and all these other different things, which, you know, they're great for that. It's just, it may be a little overkill, you know, with some of the designs, you know, just from a cost. I mean, you can kind of get away with anything on a short hike anyway. But yeah, you know, we've seen people, you know, buy packs. You know, one of the funniest ones, I had a lady at Ironman Arizona a few years ago. She bought her HydroQuiver single barrel. She's like, oh my God, this would be so cool to take my kids to Disneyland, and I can drink my drink all day, and I can have my phone with me. And I was like,
well, that's an endurance activity for sure.
It is an endurance activity, but it definitely caught me off guard. So yeah, it's neat to see people use them for all sorts of things.
And do you see an even distribution across both sexes, both men and women, buying all the different products, or does one tend to buy more of something than the other?
No, it's a pretty good split. I mean, we typically see around a 42% female demographic, and I, you know, when you look at it at females in the sport of ultra running and endurance riding, that pretty much mirrors who's out there. I mean, it's pretty much a 40-ish percentage of females in the sport. So yeah, it just seems like we get a pretty equal buy across all products, and we kind of mirror what the sport has from a demographics perspective.
And are you surprised by the huge increase in the sport overall in the last 18 years?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think as, you know, like the sport of adventure racing, it was huge for a while, and now not very many people even know about it because it's fallen off big time. And I think a lot of people I know a lot of, you know, my old friends in adventure race sport have jumped into ultra running, or they've jumped into endurance riding. But even endurance riding, you see more and more people jumping into ultra running. And I think so many people realize, like, the impact of running on a road, it hurts. It just does. And you know, I think that, I mean, just a lot of people want to go off. They want to be on the trails. It's more adventure. It's more exciting. It's more beautiful. And then I think a lot of people are jumping into the sport of, you know, especially again, ultra running, because it's beautiful and scenic. There's a great camaraderie. It's a great mix of people, that, you know, have a like-minded mindset. It's not really like this super hard charging type A crazy. It's just, everybody's out there to have fun. And, you know, it's truly a sport about yourself, it's about racing against yourself. Let me put it that way. Very few people care about how they're placing in the race. You don't hear people be like, oh, I got 47th in the race. You know, right. Most people are like, I did 2 hours better today than I did last time. That's what the sport's about. And I think that's what's really helping that sport to really take off so well.
Well, one of the things we hear from a lot of our listeners and from a couple of our guests is that one of the best things about ultras is the amount of food that you can consume during the course of the race. And we have a segment on the show called Strap on the Feed Bag, when we talk about nutrition and all the food that you can then eat after you do a certain kind of activity. So what do you typically strap on the feed bag for after a really big event?
Oh, man. You know, I like spicy food a lot. And so pretty much anything spicy. I'd say Mexican food or Thai food almost always. But during, I'm a huge fan of pickles. I love to eat pickles, and I get to eat a copious amount of pickles. You know, yeah, there's that, but I've kind of found that pickles help to cleanse the sugary drink mix off your palate, and I swear, I only go liquid in races with exception of pickles, and I'll eat them maybe every 4 hours, and it just seems like it works so well for me. I'm sure the electrolytes from them are great. I take electrolytes anyway, but I really firmly believe it's that acidic cleanse off your tongue that kind of resets your sugary balance, or at least makes you crave your sugary mix. And I love them. And then even after the race, I like the, what's it called, mezeta. It's like a pickled jalapeno spicy cauliflower and peppers and stuff like that. And I love to eat like okra, hot jalapeno okra, basically anything really hot and spicy after a race. I love it.
Any bad experiences with food on an ultra?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I puked so hard on literally one goldfish, or animal crackers, what it was. It's this little, like, powdery thing. It just came out and stuck on the rock. And I had to puke so hard for, like, 8 or 10 miles at least. And it was only in a 50K, but things went wrong. I think I had too many gummy bears and goldfish and animal crackers and probably everything, M&Ms on course. But it was literally mile 30.5. I could see the finish line at the top in Calico and SoCal. And it was just right there. But finally, I'm like, finally, I'm going to puke. This is awesome. I puked so hard, I tore my psoas muscle. And then all that came out was that one little animal cracker. But I was great after that. So, yeah, that's I won't eat animal crackers in a race ever again. Actually, I pretty much ever since then, I just stopped. As much as I love gummy bears and all that junk, I pretty much don't eat hardly any food on course at all anymore as a result.
Really? Oh, this is Brian. What do you use for nutrition? Or are you just completely fat adapted, and when you come out, you're ripped down to just muscle and bone by the end of the event?
Yeah. That's definitely what it is. No, I wish, man. I wish that worked. No, I use a product called Infinite Nutrition, and I dialed in this custom formula. You can like design your own formula, and I stumbled onto those guys, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, probably now. And you know, they I told them it was actually not long after I puked in that race, and I puked on a different mix, and I kind of somewhat blamed it on this other company, but it probably was all the other junk food I ate on course. And a lot of people have that same problem. They're like, oh, I got sick on whatever. I'm like, okay, well, what else did you eat while you were racing? Oh yeah, maybe it was the gummy bears and the M&Ms and the chocolate cake and the burritos. And you know, your body, most people can't do these things. So, right. So I use Infinite, and these guys, they do like an hour call with you, and it's so cool. I mean, they've really helped to change the game for me. I've raced up to, I don't know, the Hawk 100 last year. I raced it with a broken foot, and I drank Infinite for 31 and a half hours. And I may have not been going very slow, but, or very fast, but that's all I had with the exception of pickles about every 4 hours or so. And I wasn't hungry. I finished the race not hungry. It's amazing. It's really helped me out.
Wow. That's
food is hard. Like, food is a hard thing to consume. You see people like, yeah. Oh yeah, I like to eat a burrito. And yeah, we did too. Like at adventure racing, we'd pack a full on Domino's meat lover's pizza with some jalapenos on it in a Ziploc bag. And we start eating it, you know, 12, 20 hours, whatever into a race. And you can do that because you're backing it off. But when you're trying to run, it's just not something. If you're hiking, you can do that. And if you're going on a long 100-mile bike section, you can do that. Or a kayak, you know, you can do that. But you can't, very few people can do that on an ultra run where you have an elevated, basically everything, but you have an elevated, you know, pulse, and, you know, you're kicking in at kind of level 2, a lot, level 3 maybe. It's just hard to do. It just doesn't work for most people. So, you know, my biggest tip to everybody is find a nutrition that works for you, and you know, try to lock it in and just try to stick with it. You know, too many people screw up their own nutrition in testing, and they never know what really could work for them because they screw it up with eating the junk on course, which your body just isn't probably going to do well with.
Well, this is all really good information because, as I said, Pierre and I, we've both run a couple of marathons. We're kind of late bloomers into running. We both started running in our late 30s. And as it happens, as it probably happens to everybody, we are starting to be asked about when we're doing our first ultras. We kind of thought, well, you're ridiculous, so we're not going to think about that. Peter's always had this idea that he'll eventually get around to one by the time he turns 50. But the call is there, the siren call to go beyond a marathon and run an ultra is there. So, aside from not eating goldfish or gummy bears, do you have any advice for potential first time ultra runners?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first off, it's not as hard as you think. I swear to God, a 50K is easier than a marathon. Not to take anything away from marathons, man. They're hard, but it's just easier. You know, marathons, you're running a long ways on pavement. You know, when you do a 50K, it would be very unlikely you're going to have like that 18 to mile 22 area of suck. You may have areas of suck. Yeah, but you don't really find that in a 50K. I don't. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was just saying, I had to puke for 10 miles in one, but that was dumb. I don't know. That was a bad experience. But generally, it's like you have stomach problems is usually what it is. Because again, you're probably eating junk. So the key, I believe, is to go off and just find a good 50K. Don't pick the hardest one around, but go find a fun one that has a cool group of people out there. There's a lot of awesome 50Ks across the country. And then, just make sure you find a nutrition strategy that works. Make sure you lube up your feet. That's the number one thing I think you can do. Or it's right up there with the top. You know, get a good lube like Squirrel Nut Butter or Tom's or, you know, there's so many different ones out there. But you know, not Vaseline, basically anything besides Vaseline, but lube the crap out of your feet, and you happy feet is makes for a really happy race. And then, just try not to pack a bunch of other junk food with you. You know, maybe take, I don't know, like a Nutrigrain bar or something that you like, you know, that you can crave even at mile 18 in a marathon. Try to find a food like that to take with you as a backup plan if you need it. But otherwise, try to go all liquid. And I firmly believe most people can do it once you find a mix that works for you. But yeah, it's just remember it's a fun day, and that's what you're there for. You don't need to beat yourself up and stress about it. I mean, worst case, you can walk 31 miles. It's not a big deal.
A fun day, or day and night, and day and night,
yeah.
And day and night, depending on how it goes.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
It's true.
You said there's 50Ks all over the place. Do you have one that is a go-to for you, or that you would recommend to first timers, or one that you're doing in the near future? Your chance to call out a 50K race that you love.
Yeah, so my first 50K was the Calico 50K in California. And it's the old Calico ghost town, and it's this old mining town, and it's such a cool, and I've known so many people to use that as their first one, because it's just a beautiful day, and then you finish running down the main street of Calico, which is basically they have like a couple times during the day, they have a gunslinger deal that comes out, and it's just this really cool deal. And you finish and have a burger and a beer, and it's just a cool spot. So yeah, I think that is an amazing one. And then another one that is one of my favorites, this is actually a trail marathon, not a 50K, but the Hawk people in Kansas, the Trail Hawks, they put on I think it's the most family oriented, awesome event on the planet. And again, they have a trail marathon, a 50 mile and a 100 mile. And it's just such a well ran organization, with just the greatest group of people. So there you go. You got one in Kansas, one in California, but one of those two would be really, really cool.
Well, we do a little race up in a place called Millinocket, Maine, every December. Can we tempt you to come out the second week of December for a full marathon?
It's free.
Oh yeah. Yeah, maybe. December is always hard.
Do any of your packs have heaters in them?
Yeah. No, yeah, you are the heater that's in the
right
pack. we you know, I tell you one thing you can do in most of our packs, you could actually put a heat pad in the back of them, mm-hmm. in behind the bladder, or there's a rear pocket back there. And because we use this thin membrane, typically I recommend this with ice packs in the summer, but yeah, like with ice packs in the summer, you can put them inside the back of the packs, and they do amazingly well with transferring the cool. But yeah, I guess you could probably put a heat pack in there.
Well, I might have to try that.
Yeah, I tell you a quick funny story about, it's not Maine, but Pennsylvania, at least up there in the neck of the woods. When we first started, you know, it's like any day we got an order, I call my wife. I'm like, did you see we got an order today? Like, we sold one pack. It was awesome. We're going to be rich. $85 a day. It was awesome. And, it was like maybe 4 or 5 days a week. Yeah, it wasn't even that. It was probably 2 or 3 days a week in the beginning for the first like 6 months that we'd sell a thing. And like, if we sold two things, it was like, holy cow. Well, it was weird because I believe it was January. Yeah, it's like January and February. For the first 2 or 3 years, we really noticed we always had a spike in our bottle-based packs with people buying our insulated bottles shipping to Pennsylvania. And I started emailing some of these people because I'm like, what is it about Pennsylvania that apparently you guys want packs so much in the cold friggin' winter? And I found it was a lot of like skate skiers that were buying our packs, and they wanted, you know, just a bottle. And then, of course, ultra runners going out, they needed to drink, and they'd throw a little vodka or put in the boiling hot water in there, and it'd last a little while. But yeah, you know, you guys that run up there in that super cold, I commend you. It's an easy thing to pass up when it's really cold, just to stay inside and, you know, relax by the fire. So, yeah, kudos to you guys, crazy Maine and Pennsylvania people. Get out there.
Well, before we let you go, what's the best way for people to find you and your products and to learn more about everything you guys offer?
Yeah, check out orangemud.com on the web. And then social media, it's at Orange Mud, or look up hashtag Orange Mud. You can find all kinds of people that are using our gear, and maybe find somebody that's your body type that you can look at and say, okay, cool, I see how they're wearing that. I see how that works with me. And this, you know, maybe that would be a good fit for me. Ping them and ask them questions. You know, it's what I always tell people, is we get people of all shapes and sizes, and, you know, there's not every pack fits everybody perfectly. You know, it's we do our best to make sure that, you know, all of our packs are designed as universal as possible, but we find, like, for large runners, large chested, large, just, you know, chest diameters, big muscly type of runners.
That's me.
Yeah, there you go. And there's a lot of challenges that they often have. And, you know, I customize packs, and I don't ever charge for it. I do it because I want to make sure everybody runs. And I'll customize packs and make them bigger for people. And, you know, just shoot, go to the website, go to contact page, say, hey, I want this pack, but I need it to fit a 58-inch chest, and I'll make it work for you. But again, you can go on social media and, you know, again, find people that look about your frame, and then ask them, what do you think of that pack? You know, I think it's one of the best resources that we have now at social media, aside from it, like, sucking the life out of you, is that it's actually a resource to go and ask people questions about, you know, products like this that can get you an answer that isn't my pitch. You know, it's like, I want people to, you know, talk with other people and ask their opinion. So yeah, I think, you know, looking up hashtags is a great way to go to learn more. And again, reach out to us anytime, orangemud.com.
Well, you have a ton of great videos. Oh, I was just going to say, you have a ton of great videos just on the Orange Mud website from, you know, it seems like just normal people and probably folks who are ambassadors for you, but there's no lack of information about Orange Mud products out there.
We try, man. It's one of my most frustrating things. You go to look at a product, you want to buy it, and they have like one picture of it. They don't show all angles. They don't have a video. And so we try. We're not perfect, but we're all, it's like a never ending process trying to keep it full of content.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. This was great. And we appreciate you giving us the time and coming on the show.
Heck yeah, guys. Now, best of luck in your training, and definitely find a fun 50K out there. Like I said, there's so many cool 50Ks and trail runs. We'd love to see you out there on the trails.
Josh, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank
no
you
worries,
so much.
No worries, guys.
Well, he was just excellent.
I can't wait to get some Orange Mud on my sneakers.
I have to go buy a pack because, as you know, I hate my water belt.
Yes.
Gives me the chub rub.
Wide Army.
Let it be.
Wow.
And
I'm not going to touch
and
that
And I'm
one.
Not a big fan of the hand hold. I'll do it.
Yeah.
But there's something about holding a bottle in one hand that throws my cadence off or tilts me over.
Well, it's
over.
Like people who put the phone on the one arm.
Nope, no.
It doesn't work for me. It
doesn't work.
So I'll tell you this. I'm real happy with my Nathan pack.
Yeah.
It's really small. It's like 2-liter, I think, bladder pack.
Yeah.
But I'm really intrigued about something that doesn't move at all.
Yeah, I like the
sits
idea.
Sits up high in the back.
Up high.
And if you look on their website, they have like a million versions of the same thing. So that's actually the biggest thing is, what is that called when you have so many decisions to make or so many options?
Life.
It's a little hard to decide which one because there's ones with more storage or less storage or this or that or this or that. But it's big bottles. It's like 23 ounces or something like that. So, and if you got the double, you're never going to need more than that.
You would never need more than that, but I would err on maybe having the option of two bottles. That's just me. I'm going to look into that. Cuz as we're getting closer to my ultra.
Yeah, it's potentially years or months away.
You brought it up in the interview. I don't know why you brought it up. Like, it could be at least 2 years away. I don't know why.
It's like within the next 6 months.
Tim Sullivan's writing a tweet right now. Hey, so we didn't get to Mr. Vinny Cent, but we will see him next week. Where's he going to be? He's reporting out of where, Brian?
He is going to be out of Baltimore.
Balmer.
With a friend of his that they get into some stuff, like he does with everybody. It's
amazing.
Of course he
does. It's amazing. But speaking of Baltimore and traveling and other locations, as you know, Brian.
Are you traveling somewhere soon?
I'm going to a place called Utica. Utica. That's where I need to be. Yep, that's right. For the Boilermaker 15.
Is there a sartorial announcement you want to make?
I just want to say, I really appreciate it. People really responded last week to the clarion call that we gave out to buy singlets to help us get to our print order. We are very close now. If you're on the fence, if you're like, do I need another singlet? Yeah, you do. It's blue. It's gorgeous. It's art by the artist in residence, Andrea Bonnie Gould.
I know her.
It's a one of a kind. There's only going to be about 30 of these things floating out there in the universe.
Buy them. But I've purchased two, one for me and one for the artist.
And I appreciate that. How about you buy two for the dogs?
I don't know what that means.
Just think about that.
Okay.
Hey. Brian, this has been...
Wow. I'm getting ready for that Freddie Mercury movie coming out.
Ow! Pop culture. This has been episode 132 of How Is Your Run Today with Brian Gould and Peter Villa.
Music, as always, by that maestro Jeff Cronenberg. The social media guru is Anna Brooks, and the artist in residence is Andrea Bonnie Gould. Special thanks to our guest, the founder of Orange Mud and crazy adventure runner, Josh Sprague.
He's more a cyclist now, he says.
That's true.
He's like two-thirds cyclist, he says.
Well, that's fine.
I would like to be two-thirds of something other than running, and I don't know what that... Oh, wait, I sit down a lot. Right?
Hey, if you're going to leave the Clyde Army, you'll be two-thirds of your former self. Hey!
Oh, wow, wait a minute. Ouch.
Oh, hey, I'm here all night.
You can join us every Saturday on Sat Stat Chats on all of the social platforms. What do I mean? I mean Twitter. I mean Instagram, and I really mean Facebook. Just tell us where you ran, how the weather was, include a sweet, sweet photo. Brian, it's getting crazy out there on the Sat Stat Chats. Are you seeing it happening?
It is so amazing. I cannot wait to contribute. I think it's going to happen. Finally, I'm going to be able to get out for a run on a Saturday.
What?
Take a picture and contribute. I love everything I'm seeing. It's like so many comments, so many photos. It's great. I'm going to tell you this.
Go ahead.
You don't even know this, Peter.
I want it.
I've been fiddling around and improving a little bit on the HWIRT.com, the howisyourruntoday.com.
Wait, are you the administrator of that site?
I'm just a guy with a Squarespace account. I don't know what's happening. I press buttons and things show up.
What do I go see if I go there right now?
All right. So the follow send page is improved. All now, right. Every episode that he has appeared in is also in his site on
okay.
his page.
All right.
The photos are now clickable, a lot of them. Before, we were having this problem with Squarespace where we could have a photo, but it wouldn't be a link. I don't know, whatever. It's fixed. That's all I have to say. Just go there. It's a little better than it was. It's a little more convenient.
Are you a technical wizard?
I'm a guy with a Squarespace account.
You're a guy who didn't run for like 3 months.
That's right. Well, I had some things to figure out.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's go for a burrito run.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and I tell you, one of the coolest things, I was doing a race. I was doing a 30K in Malaysia last year, and as I was running with a buddy of mine, a guy I've done about probably 70 adventure races with, and we were running up in the freaking jungle. It's hot. Like, I can't even begin to describe the heat. But you know, in my phone, I almost always have it on vibrate, but that day I had it off for some reason. And like, we're running along, and I hear cha-ching, and that's our Shopify website saying you have a new order. And we're running along and running along, and I hear cha-ching, and we're running along and cha-ching. And I'm like, God damn, like, today's a good day. I'm like, I'm running in Malaysia in the jungle with my buddy that I've done adventure races with, and I'm literally selling packs right now at, like, I don't even know what time of day it was back home, you know? It's just so cool that I can go on a bike ride and orders are coming in while I'm on a bike ride.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's remarkable that it works.